most recent presidents was concerned with the composition of his own speeches and was very verbal as a writer.
What were his liabilities? Where did he fall down as president? Mr. Kennedy, probably because he was aggressive and decisive, was deeply involved in every action taken by his administration. He was a participant. A participant as an athlete when he was young, as a writer of books who couldn't stand the passive role of being a newspaper reporter, as a legislator. But unfortunately, none of these early roles prepared him to be an administrator. Perhaps this was his failing. Perhaps this was where he fell short. Dr. Eric Goldman.
I think that Mr. Kennedy's strategies as an administrator was to be a bad administrator, which I suspect is the key to all vigorous presidents of a certain reform trend of mind. I've been impressed by the fact that in modern American history, it's the conservative who is the great administrator and who has very little policy to administer. It's the liberal who has lots of policies he wants carried out but doesn't bother much about administration. This is true of Franklin Roosevelt, let's say, as opposed to Thomas Dewey or as opposed to Herbert Hoover. I noted the other day that the president, shortly before his death, remarked kiddingly that he was going to have a hard time finding a publisher for his memoirs because Bundy and Schlesinger would be in there ahead of time writing them, but that he was the only man who really understood what had happened in his administration. And I think that's right. It was all so personal and, in a sense, so helter-skelter compared to the rather neat structure of an Eisenhower. I say none of this in criticism because from the context in which I'm putting these remarks, I'm very skeptical of great administrators myself.
President Kennedy will be remembered for a great many things, for his innovations in the field of foreign policy and reducing things like the Peace Corps, the Alliance for Progress, trade expansion, for reducing the tensions of a Cold War which had become almost excruciatingly suspenseful, and for insisting that the word equality means exactly that. But there was something else, something not easily definable. Call it verve, call it élan, call it vitality. It was there. Sometimes it made the very atmosphere electric.
Mr. Kennedy made the executive office exciting. He made it glamorous. He brought back to it some of that excitement, some of that prestige that had been associated with it under Franklin Roosevelt, particularly. With Kennedy's election and with the inauguration of the new administration, a stir of excitement went through the whole country. As you will remember, thousands and thousands of young people flocked to Washington to take part in the great adventure which opened up again before them, just as they had flocked to Washington in 1933 to take part in a great adventure. And by restoring significance and excitement to politics, and by enlisting the young of all ages, the young in spirit, the young in heart, the adventurous, the experimental, he added a new dimension to the politics of this particular generation.
The politics of this generation are stamped indelibly with the character of President Kennedy. Unfortunately, perhaps, the man best able to interpret that character is now gone. For it was the president himself who best knew his generation, who best understood what really went on during his all-too-short administration. Perhaps history will never be able to learn everything it needs to know in order to put him in his proper rank. Where will history rank Mr. Kennedy among presidents? It is probably too early to say, but we ask a couple of historians to speculate whether they would put him in the first rank among great presidents. Here is Gerald W. Johnson.
I would put President Kennedy unquestionably in the second rank, perhaps high up in the second rank. Kennedy cannot be evaluated at this moment. It's too early. But as I guess, I would allow him rank in the second division and pretty high rank at that.
Here is Henry Steele Cominger's answer.
President Kennedy brought a great deal to the presidency. He belonged very clearly in that category of strong presidents, whose previous representatives include Washington and Jackson and Polk, Lincoln, Theodore Roosevelt and Franklin Roosevelt and Truman, rather than in the weaker or more retiring presidents. He believed that the president was and should be a national leader. He believed that the president was and had to be a party leader. He believed that it was up to the president to formulate policies and to win public approval for those policies.
The final judgment, perhaps, belongs to the man himself. For it was John Fitzgerald Kennedy who set his own goals in his inaugural speech on January 20th, 1961.
Now the trumpet summons us again. Not as a call to arms, though arms we need. Not as a call to battle, though embattled we are. But a call to bear the burden of a long twilight struggle year in and year out. Rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation. A struggle against the common enemies of man. Tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what America will do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
And what is it like in Washington tonight? What was it like in the capital of the United States today, as people come from all over the world to pay final homage to President John Fitzgerald Kennedy? Here is Ellie Abel of NBC News.
It took the violent death of America's president to bring together tonight here in Washington more crowned and uncrowned heads of nations than have ever assembled before in the United States. All afternoon and well into the night, their jets came screaming down to land at Dulles International Airport in suburban Virginia, came to join in this hour of national grief and shame with the American people. Most of them are silent. They feel, as President de Gaulle of France made clear on his arrival this afternoon, that they would consider it in poor taste to deliver statements. Their presence alone is an act of condolence, and they come from every continent, from the ancient centers of Europe and Asia and Africa and South America. A few did have something to say, and some of those words are worth reporting. The Prime Minister of Norway, for example, Einar Gerhardsen, "I know a number of Norwegians," he said, "who lost some of their closest family and didn't have a tear in their eyes. I saw these people weeping at the news of the death of President Kennedy." Nor is this show of grief limited to such staunch friends and allies as the Norwegians, the British, or the Italians. The Vice Premier of Poland, doubtless a good communist, made a point of telling reporters on his arrival that his visit was not just a diplomatic gesture. The assassin, said Vice Premier Piotr Jaroszewicz, here from communist-ruled Poland, the assassin aimed not only at the body of John F. Kennedy, but at the ideas and the ideals which the president many times expressed. That's why he was here, he said. Jean Monnet, chief architect of Europe's reconstruction and father of the common market, said, "The death of the president has caused a deep sadness all over Europe, not only because he was president, but because of the tragedy of the whole affair." Representing the Shah of Iran, his brother, Prince Golan Reza Pahlavi, said, "It is a pity that I come to the United States on such an occasion, because I know the whole world is sorrowful. He worked so hard for peace." And so it goes. Traditional enemies arrive one after the other to join in mourning. The President of Israel and the Foreign Minister of the United Arab Republic. The sister of India's Prime Minister Nehru, Madam Vijaya Lakshmi Pandit, and the Foreign Minister of Pakistan, Zulfikar Ali Bhutto. They keep coming, the allies, the neutrals, and those who, in the late president's words, would make themselves our adversaries. For example, Anastas Mikoyan, the wily old survivor who served Stalin and now Khrushchev, first deputy premier of the Soviet Union, expected tomorrow from Moscow. President Johnson will be meeting at least the heads of these national delegations after the funeral late tomorrow. But first, the young widow, Jacqueline Kennedy, will receive them, her final White House reception. Mrs. Golda Meir, the Israeli foreign minister who grew up in Milwaukee and has been a frequent visitor, found this a heartbreaking visit. It seems too terrible, she said, for words to express. And the foreign minister of Brazil, João Augusto Araújo Castro, mourned the president. The world, he said, has lost a great leader. Willy Brandt, mayor of encircled West Berlin, arrived with tears in his eyes. The people of Germany, he said, feel very sad. They share the mood of the American people at this tragic moment, but Berlin and the American people will stick together. That was the comment of Mayor Willy Brandt. Most of the visitors will be gone by tomorrow night or Tuesday. Gone like West German Chancellor Erhard. He had been scheduled to come on a happier mission. Had President Kennedy lived, he would have arrived today for a business visit, one of those periodic Allied consultations in which, for the first time, Erhard was to have taken the place of the venerable Konrad Adenauer. Now it is a briefer, sadder mission. But like the thousands filing through the Capitol under the rotunda tonight, these leaders of foreign nations wanted to be here, wanted to be part of this moment of national grief. Ellie Abel, NBC News, Washington.
Among other notables since arrived are Prince Philip of England and Prime Minister Sir Alec Douglas Hume. We will continue in a few moments with The Highest Price, the life and times of John F. Kennedy.
We pause now 10 seconds for station identification.
WNBC, AM and FM, New York.
And now, from a name and a voice well known, another assessment of President Kennedy.
This is Mel Allen. This reporter found himself with an open weekend and following the weekly gridiron goings-on and took off for a quick fishing trip to Nassau on British soil. Late Friday afternoon at nearly 5 o'clock, returning to the dock, I suddenly noticed British flags at half-mast. I turned to the skipper of the little fishing boat and asked, "Those flags weren't at half-mast when we left a few hours ago, were they?" He, as well as I and my companion, were unsure. And so it was that on the waters of the Atlantic, we stopped a sailboat headed in the opposite direction. Hailing its skipper, we asked if he knew why the flags were flying at half-mast. He yelled across the open water, "President Kennedy has been assassinated." A shocked, stunned group suddenly burst out, "My God, no." And silently, we hoped that he was mistaken. And thus it was that just a few hours ago, I stood almost on the very spot where President Kennedy stood to be welcomed by the then Prime Minister of Great Britain, Macmillan, in the historic Nassau Conference. Flying back to New York to participate in this tribute to our late president, my mind wandered to the time it was my privilege to have met him not quite 2 years ago, when he attended the National Football Hall of Fame Foundation dinner here in New York to pay tribute to many outstanding American citizens who, like President Kennedy, in their youth were athletes in their college days, and to pay tribute to sports in general. I recall that he seemed so relaxed in an atmosphere that held great appeal for him, even to the extent that he insisted on a program for all Americans, which he fervently urged them to follow. His physical fitness program. And I was proud to have been a member of his physical fitness committee. As he said, to be strong intellectually and spiritually, we must develop and utilize our physical skills. We are an under-exercised nation. But he thrilled the spectator sports as well. He threw out the first ball to inaugurate new baseball seasons. An avid football fan, too, he recently recalled his 21st birthday, not because he had come of age and was eligible to vote, but because it reminded him of a football game. "Many of my boyhood heroes," he said, "were football stars. And I can tell you from personal experience that even as President of the United States and until he drew his last breath, many of his heroes still were from the world of sports. When Babe Ruth's record was broken, he invited the man who broke it to the White House." As he said, "I still thrill to a long run, a solid block, or a good tackle. I'm like a lot of other Americans who never quite made the team, but loved the game. And so in this hour of national and worldwide grief, may I offer this prayer to his memory, a prayer written by a priest whose identity we've never been able to find, but expresses the sportsman's creed and the thinking, too, of our late president, whose zest for living included that great love of sports. Dear God, help me to be a sport in this little game of life. Play me where you need me. I only ask for the stuff to give you 100% of what I've got. If all the hard drives come my way, I thank you for the compliment. And God, help me to remember you won't let anything come that you and I together can't handle. And help me to take the bad breaks as part of the game. Help me to realize that the best part of the game is helping the other players. And finally, God, if fate seems to uppercut me with both hands, help me to take that as part of the game also. Help me not to whimper or squeal that the game is a frame-up or that I got a raw deal. And when in the dusk I get the final bell, I ask for no lying complimentary stones. I'd only like to know, God, that you feel that I've been a good guy. Even now, as the shock begins to ever so slowly wear away, we remember him, too, as the author of a book, which, even as in sports, spoke of the many challenges and the dangers of America's great statesman. The hand that wrote it has been stilled by an assassin's bullet. But sadly, it also wrote that book's epilogue, another of the profiles in courage. Sports at a time like this? Yes, for he loved them. And after all, ladies and gentlemen, sports are just games of rules. But one of the greatest rules ever to be handed down to us is the golden rule. Another way of saying sportsmanship. Another way of saying America. Another way of saying John Fitzgerald Kennedy. This is Mel Allen in New York.
In the city of Washington tonight, in the national capital, a touching story of love and devotion, as reported by Bryson Rash.
Shortly after 9 o'clock, Mrs. Jacqueline Kennedy, accompanied only by her brother-in-law, the Attorney General of the United States, Robert Kennedy, came here to the rotunda. The two of them went inside the rope. They came up the great stairway in the east portico. They were recognized by police, and the crowd was moved aside, the great crush of people, so that these two people could come into the rotunda. They went inside the velvet-roped-off area, where is the catafalque and the casket in which the body of the late president rests. Mrs. Kennedy alone went to the side of the casket. She genuflected, touched the casket, and the flag that drapes it turned and departed. Her eyes were moist. The Attorney General met her halfway, took her arm, and led her back out through the crowd, through the portico. She stopped several times to accept the well wishes of several ladies in the crowd as she walked by. Her appearance was an emotional peak which triggered tears among many of those standing by. The two of them then walked out of the out onto the east portico, and a handful of reporters had spotted her and started out immediately after her. The Secret Service man turned to us and said, "Please keep a respectful distance," which we of course did. The two of them walked down the great staircase where just a few hours earlier the body of her husband had been borne and placed in its point of respect. They walked down the staircase, and at the bottom was the big limousine ready to take them back to the White House. Mrs. Kennedy shook her head and said, "No, I would rather walk." The two alone set off across the darkened plaza. They walked across the little grass strip there and that behind them, one Secret Service man, several Capitol policemen. There was no one there, of course, but as they got beyond the Senate wing of the Capitol building itself, they turned left and plunged through a large group of people that were milling about on the sidewalk. They were not recognized. Mrs. Kennedy wore a black dress, a black coat, and a black scarf, which was pulled back from her face. Again, followed by the Secret Service men and two or three Capitol policemen, they walked down Capitol Hill. This meant they walked over grass under trees, dodging between parked automobiles, and then dodging between parked automobiles and no sidewalk, of course. Many people were coming up Capitol Hill, and they did not recognize Mrs. Kennedy nor the Attorney General. This included several Capitol Hill policemen. They finally got down to the bottom of Capitol Hill, at first in Constitution Avenue, and there people began to recognize them. They stopped for just a moment, and another well-wisher came up to say hello. And Mrs. Kennedy paid her respects. At the moment, walking into the rotunda, is the President of Ireland, Éamon de Valera. He is accompanied by many of his officials. The President of Ireland has come to the rotunda to pay his respects to the late President of the United States. There was a large group of gentlemen with him. Secretary of State Rusk is among them. The Irish Ambassador, Mr. Kiernan. The President of Ireland, accompanied also by the United States Ambassador to Ireland, Mr. McCluskey. They have paid their respects, and now they walk off to the right. A large group has just come into the rotunda, headed by the President of Ireland, Éamon de Valera. With him is Secretary of State Rusk, and the Irish and the United States Ambassador to Ireland, Mr. McCluskey. They stand for a moment and talk. And now they walk back across the rotunda and are making their way out of the building.